Good evening and welcome, everyone. Today is February 8th, 2017. It is 5:30 p.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for our weekly business session. We'll start, as we always do, with the Pledge of Allegiance. So, gentlemen, please remove your hats. Welcome, everyone. Appreciate you guys braving the weather out here, but we are Oregonians, at least most of us. I'd encourage you to just put your phones on silent or vibrate if you've got one, so it doesn't interrupt our meeting here this evening. We've got a fairly light agenda, although it looks like a bunch of stuff. We've got a proclamation first that we'll recognize for the second week in a row, and then we're going to run through our administrative calendar. We're going to review those items, and then we'll take public comment, which is item number 3. Before coming back to those administrative items and taking formal action. We'll move on to item number 4 after that, which is our consent calendar, and then the remainder of the agenda. Hopefully there's copies of the agenda on the table back there in the back, so you can kind of follow along as we proceed through our meeting. We're going to proceed with item number 1, which is a proclamation in the matter of proclaiming the month of February 2017 as Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. And I believe Commissioner Walker is going to read this proclamation.
I hope not. She's not here.
Old habits.
She retired.
I'm looking for her.
Quit.
Yep. Okay. I apologize. That's bound to happen.
Lisa, I'm not saying that I'm only 3 years older than you.
Commissioner Heck or Reedy or Blake.
Let's leave age out of this.
Hair color.
Morgan, would you be
Blank.
So kind?
I do need glasses, though, so I'm going to shut up now. So last week, we had the privilege of hearing from the Women's Crisis Team and the Teen Advisory Council that was helping with this, and they said orange is the color to fight for or against teen violence. And so I wore orange today, knowing that our proclamation that was supposed to be read last week, it's getting read tonight, so knowing they wouldn't be here, I was trying to honor them. So in the matter proclaiming the month of February 2017, as Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month. Whereas Josephine County is committed to the well-being and protection of our youth, the safety of our communities, and to fostering a society based upon respect for one another and where violence has no role. Teen dating violence and its various forms of control and abuse is a serious crime that can continue into adulthood with the potential to destroy lives. And whereas teen dating violence involves physical, sexual, verbal, emotional, economic, and other abusive behavior, including harassment and cyberbullying via texting, sexting, emailing, instant messaging, or posting on social media, and is committed by a person intending to harm, threaten, intimidate, harass, control, isolate, or monitor another person with whom they have or have had a dating relationship. During early teenage dating experiences, new and complex emotions can result in a victim misinterpreting certain behaviors displayed by a dating partner, such as possessiveness and impulsive actions as affection, and whereas national studies on this issue indicate that approximately 1 in 3 adolescent girls experiences some form of interpersonal violence, nearly 1 in 10 teens report they were intentionally hit, slapped, or physically hurt by their boyfriend or girlfriend, and 62% of young teens ages 11 to 14 report knowing friends who have been verbally abused by a boyfriend or girlfriend. And whereas both houses of the U.S. Congress have declared February as National Teen Dating Violence Awareness and Prevention Month, and Josephine County joins in this observance by encouraging statewide youth, families, schools, law enforcement communities, government agencies, elected officials, civic organizations, and other interested groups to show support for organizations and individuals that provide critical advocacy to victims and promote public awareness of teen dating violence. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Josephine County Board of Commissioners does hereby proclaim the month of February 2017 as Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month in Josephine County, done and dated this 8th day of February 2017.
We'll make sure that makes its way into the appropriate hands. So thank you very much, Commissioner Morgan. Item number 2 is our administrative calendar. We have 2 items in consideration today. The first is item 2A, approval of order number 2017-006 in the matter of an amendment to the Josephine County Administrative Policy and Procedure, specifically item A5, and its issue is responding to citizen complaints. This has kind of been jointly referred, I think, Councillor Hicks is here, but so is Ms. Schmelzer, our community development director. You guys don't have to fight over who gets to talk about this one, but Ms. Schmelzer, if you would be so kind.
Okay, my name is Julie Schmelzer. I'm the Director of Community Development for Josephine County. This was brought before you because our department has encountered a lot of complaints that we haven't had in the past. We're getting people that are having problems in their neighborhood, and they're actually terrified, and they want to report some of these violations for us to follow up on them. But they're afraid because once they report them, the alleged violator can come in and get a copy of that, and they're concerned about retaliation and some of the things that they're encountering. I'll give you a couple specific examples. We have, and I've talked to you about this before, we had a woman who was afraid she had been threatened with sexual assault if she reported something. We have one woman who is, her property is caught in the crossfire of a gun battle on adjacent properties, who is afraid to report information to us. We have one situation where an elderly man and women take turns sleeping so they can protect their property. And the stories go on and on and on, where people want to report violations, but they're terrified to report them because of out of fear. And what this policy does is it would allow us to accept anonymous complaints. And those would be complaints of the Rural Land Development Code. Legal has also put in the Building Safety Code as well. So those are the two codes that would be affected by this policy change, this policy amendment. The commissioners, the previous board had also recommended that in this policy there be a provision that in order to accept the anonymous complaint, that there would have to be two complaints filed, and those two adult residents that would be complaining would have to live within 1/2 mile radius of the alleged violation. And I know there's some discussion on that, or a point probably to discuss, is that something we want to proceed with if we proceed with the policy. The department urges your support on accepting the anonymous complaints. We would have to revise our form. It's an easy process. We've already given some thought to that on how that would proceed, and thought to a process on how we would keep those confidential to make sure that they couldn't be accessed just by anyone or accidentally a different staff person come in the office and grab a file and copy it or something to that nature. So we've already given thought to that. We feel that we have a good internal process that we can address these, and like I said, we just encourage your support on this.
Ms. Meltzer, do you mind taking a little bit of time and talking about the current process for addressing complaints or violations, potential violations?
Sure. At the current time, through our department, anyone can make a complaint. They are open record. So if somebody has, and this happens, where they think it's the lady down the street that reported them, so they come in and they do a public records request. When they do that public records request, we give them the information that they requested, which is usually a copy of the complaint form. So that is the current process as far as how they make the complaint. There's a form they fill out, they come in, and then the process on how somebody could access that data. Once we have that complaint, we open a file on it, and we do our research on it, inspect the property. If it is found that there is a violation there, the process, our internal process is to give them a 30-day notice to comply. And if they, after 30 days, they don't comply, then we send a 15-day, give them another letter, 15-day notice. If we still don't get compliance after that, we follow up with another letter for a 7-day opportunity for compliance. After that, if they have not complied, then we consult with legal counsel and kind of rank them on which ones we should bring forward to the board to determine whether or not they would support it going to legal counsel for enforcement action.
I think the crux of the matter is the fact that the county doesn't pursue potential violations on properties until we get a complaint. So
that's yes. We are strictly complaint-driven. We have to be complaint-driven because we don't have the manpower to, we don't have the staff or the time to actually go out and look for violations. I will say this. We get a lot of complaints, though. You saw the numbers in the quarterly report. We're up to about, you know, we have over 300 that we haven't even opened yet this year. And we have 200 that Denise has been, over 200 that she's been working on just since August. So we definitely have enough citizen involvement filing these complaints that we do not go out looking for them.
So we were trying, the board and its reason for addressing this at all was really to kind of look at those situations that might be an extension of a new industry in our community that is sometimes put neighbors in not the best of terms. And so I think this board has inherited this idea of or an issue from the previous board, chose not to take action necessarily until this board had an opportunity to hear about it. This is what I understand. I think this is the first public opportunity to really weigh in on this is an administrative, so this isn't an ordinance, this isn't a law, this is an internal policy with what guides our processes. We technically don't have to have more than one anonymous complaint. The county could probably pass an order that lets your office go explore options for violations, opportunities in the community where there are violations. We don't do that, and we don't have that on our books yet or a plan to. This is just trying to accommodate those challenging situations that you have alluded to. And those aren't the only examples, so when people come up here and say something to the effect of, well, those really sound like more of a law enforcement type of a situation, we don't disagree with that. You're absolutely right. That doesn't mean that there might not be a violation there that's also causing some negative impact to neighbors. And so that's just an extension of why there's a heightened level of tension in the community or between neighbors, potentially. So that's what drives me to this, entertaining this idea of, you got to figure out a way to mitigate the challenge of just having a neighbor who just doesn't like another neighbor from doing it anonymously and doesn't quit, even if there isn't a violation, or doing it out of spite. We're trying to figure out a way to thread this needle. So this isn't an easy situation any way you slice it, but trying to figure out a way to make a policy that works.
Commissioner Morgan? So there's two things that I think would be relevant tonight that I remember being brought up in our administrative meetings. That is what other departments' policies are. If I remember correctly, it is our policy of the county to accept confidential complaints in all departments across the county with the exception of these. Is that correct? If I remember, Councilor Hicks, was that correct?
I have it right here.
Okay. Sorry, I was trying to give you an out because I saw the look and I knew he gave it to us last time. So we're switching presenters if you're wondering where we're coming from. Councilor Hicks presented to us in our admin meeting, and so that's the source from the last time.
I'll just read real quick if that's okay with you. Confidentiality of complaints, this is what's currently on the books. Board of County Commissioners recognizes that the intent, custom, practice, and probably general understanding among citizens is that complaints are received in confidence. It is also recognized that public disclosure of such complaints would undermine the reporting process, diminish the number and scope of such reports, impair the flow of citizen information available to the board and other appropriate county officials, and impair the enforcement of county ordinances and other laws. We do receive them in other departments. It's this one, and I believe it is with the solid waste one as well, that they don't accept the confidential complaints.
And that's something that has changed. It has been in the past, was changed by an order or resolution in the past, and then has been looked at several times in the last 20 years, at least what was presented to us the other day. What you just read is also similar to, if I remember correctly, what the state requirements for a confidential complainant is.
That is my understanding. You know, and the other, just one thing I would like to add to that, too, when you're talking the state requirements, you know, people can, what we're asking is to allow people to file these confidential complaints. If they go to court, though, at that point, those confidential complaints, you know, they can discover and see who actually made the complaint. So, and the state, I mean, that's just the way the state courts are, that we have to divulge that information at that time. So people have to understand, even though they're making that confidential complaint, if it goes to court, the person with the violation can still find out who made that complaint. I mean, that's just the way the law is, but for our purposes, you know, a lot of them get resolved before we even get that far, or we hope they do. So, you know, for most people, I think they, and the people that I've talked to that are interested in the ability to file confidential complaints, they recognize at some point their name could get out there, but for right now, they're just too terrified. They want to see something done, and we can't do it without the complaint. Does that answer your question, Commissioner Morgan?
It gives extra information that's valuable but not directly answer the question I asked. But I knew the answer to it already in that we were presented last week, but for the sake of the audience here today, the rest of our departments, we do allow confidential complainants. And it was only restricted to these two, now recommending three departments that it be restricted to, if memory serves correct. So this is not inconsistent with, we already allow confidential except for these areas.
We allow confidential except in the community development department and, I believe, through the solid waste program. But this does not affect the solid waste program because they have a separate ordinance. So there's a still, they still don't accept the, my understanding is they still don't accept the confidential complaints because it's by a, they have an actual ordinance that addresses them.
It used to, as it now stands, you have to have two complaints within a half a mile, correct?
No, that's what the previous board had recommended the policy say.
Okay, so right now it's still one complaint, right. But it's not confidential.
That's correct.
In other words, it's an open record at the, and it's open record, and what we're addressing here is confidentiality only. The rest of the process all stays the same. The open the file, research, inspect the property, 30-day notice and 15-day notice and all that, that all remains the same, correct?
That all remains the same, that's correct. The only thing that changes is the ability to allow us to accept the confidential complaint and then under what terms to accept that confidential complaint, which is, as the previous board had recommended, two complainants within a half-mile radius of the violation.
Okay, but those would be confidential.
Confidential.
I think for clarity, so you're not addressing the ordinance that governs solid waste.
No.
And there might be people who are confused about that, what we're talking about in the administrative policy. It isn't the ordinance. And so I don't know how to be more clear about that. We're talking about something different.
That is correct, Commissioner Harrod. So this policy to allow us to accept confidential complaints only will apply. Okay, so we have the other ones that do, like Public Works, for example. So this proposal is for the Community Development Department related to violations of the Rural Land Development Code and Building Safety Code. There still may be violations of the public nuisance laws, such as garbage on a property. That is handled by environmental health, and this does not affect that program. So that program still has their requirements of three complainants needed, and they're not confidential. But this one, so for clarification, yeah, it's just zoning and building safety.
I think that provides some clarity to me. Hopefully that does to our audience who easily could understand how this would be, you know, maybe misconstrued that that's what we were talking about. I think that's the angst that I've heard. I've received an email. I think the board did to that effect, and it's easily confused because I think I was prior to this at times. And so that's not what we're talking about here.
Right. I'll just give you some examples of the common ones where people are concerned and want to do the confidential complaints. Compounds. We have a rash of compounds out there. And when I say compound, I'm talking about a multitude of campers, tents, tarps used for sleeping purposes, etc., where you have multiple people occupying that on private property. Not always, but oftentimes, the sheriff is involved in these properties as well. And the people, the neighbors, are terrified. They've either seen people come across their property, steal stuff, threaten them, shoot guns at them, have their dogs patrol the road so they can't walk up and down the road anymore. Those are the types of, that's probably the biggest one that people are afraid to report or are concerned about retaliation. That, or sometimes in the riparian area where people cut all the vegetation for whatever reason. Usually it's pretty difficult for somebody to know that unless you're a neighbor. So they're oftentimes afraid to report that. So we do have other ones. Fences, occasionally, most of the time it's pretty easy to see a fence. So, you know, they know anybody could be reporting that. So those tend not to be so much. But it's pretty much the compounds that are getting the, that people are afraid to report.
Okay.
Follow up?
Yes.
We've been exposed to an awful lot of things that started last administration and then have pushed through to this one. I just have to ask, at any time was this, or is it a requirement for this order for public comment? Was that done to a prior commission, or has there ever been any opportunity for public comment on this?
This is the first.
This is
the first public comment period on it.
I believe, having talked about this with the prior board, that would have been on an agenda for an administrative meeting on a Thursday. And so typically, if it went through a regular schedule, it would be presented at a Thursday meeting. That calendar is provided at least 24 hours in advance, sometimes more, as an agenda item. If the board chooses to move it forward for action at the weekly business session, action isn't taken for 6 days, which is also an opportunity for the public to weigh in, which we did receive emails on this, and maybe a phone call or two. And so this is a much more elongated process, having talked about it last year with the previous board at a Thursday meeting, that now it's here, and you know, it's certainly up to the public to weigh in on this. It doesn't have to be done tonight. We can take public comment, revisit the issue.
I'm big on allowing the public to speak on any matter, and this to me, I can hear the angst in your voice because you're the one feeling the complaint, and you're the one that has lays says, you know, I don't even know if I should be calling you. You know, because I think there's a change in atmosphere over, say, 5 years ago because of, you know, and I'm not going to blame any one industry on it, but because there's been complaints all along. But I'd like to allow the public an opportunity to weigh in on it at some point in time if it's not something that we absolutely have to do tonight.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And I do just want to clarify, Commissioner Hare made a good point there. It was on an agenda, so the public saw it. They could send in comments. When I say the public hasn't had that opportunity to weigh in, this is the first time we are publicly in this room taking the public oral comment on it. Because, as you know, you have received some comment already on it from people that either saw it on a past agenda or knew it was coming up tonight, but this is the first one where we're actually in this room discussing it.
Okay, I just want to make sure it wasn't heard before and then carried over. If we're going to hear public comment tonight, I'm golden with that.
Good.
Absolutely. We don't take action on, we've never taken action. We take action on stuff that doesn't have an opportunity for public comment.
Okay. So.
And especially a change in policy. Reasons. Item number 2B is approval of, if there is nothing else.
Yes, this came forward, and I have a quick, this is an intergovernment agreement, number 151689, between Josephine County and the Oregon Department of Human services for DD 53 client transportation. I'll read this. Scott Chancey's not here this evening, but he did send along a memo that he'd like me to read to the public. This is a contract with DHS where they pay for full cost of transportation for qualified clients through their DD 53 program. The transit department provides for the rides, then requests reimbursement for the full cost of the ride at $15.03 per one-way ride. These clients are riding to and from activity centers and job sites. All are developmentally disabled to some extent, and all would qualify for Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, required demand response services as well. Instead of taking them two and three at a time, a larger vehicle is used and 15 are transported at a time. The charge to the client of $3 per day will remain the same, only the rate being charged to DHS is changing. This agreement has been in place in the past, but this year the rate is going from $7.47 to $15.03. The reason for the change in rate is because some of them are being transported with demand response services rather than the larger group ride. This is due to a lack of room on the group ride vehicle. The group ride costs $1 less than the demand response service and serves as the economic incentive to choose that transportation arrangement. This contract is revenue neutral and covers 100% of the expense of the providing the service. This contract, once approved, is expected to generate around $26,000 for the remainder of this fiscal year. So it's just a matter of changing, and it's all covered by DHS, and they foot the full cost of transportation for qualified clients.
Great. We will move on to item number three, which is requesting comments from citizens. Please just state your name and general locale, not your specific address isn't necessary. And just raise your hand, Sandy Castanelli is doing, and you can go first.
Sandy Castanelli, Merlin, Oregon. You know, this is not really public comment on an agenda item. There is no public comment on agenda items on this agenda right here. We have to use our time under requests and comments from citizens in order to weigh in on this agenda item. So I request that in the future, like it was many, many years in the past, that we have two opportunities for people to speak, one on the agenda items and one request and comments from citizens. Now I'll use my precious 3 minutes to address item 1A. You know, this is deceiving to the public. It says that it's a confidential complaint when in reality it is not. These people are going to be disclosed, like you said, during a court process. County Council has based the proposed administrative policy on an ORS that does not automatically impart confidentiality or exemption from mandatory disclosure of these complaints. As the public records law and resolution 93106 had stated, the law is primarily a disclosure law rather than a confidentiality law, and those commissioners chose to keep citizen complaints a matter of open public record as it should be. Confidentiality is usually between two parties, like attorney-client or patient, doctor-patient relationships, or when specifically identified by law, such as the HIPAA laws, you cannot disclose medical information to people other than family members. You have not identified the specific law that keeps these complaints confidential. Property owners have a right to full disclosure of complaint information if the county is going to accuse them of a violation. If not, a false confidentiality relationship between a complainer and the county puts the accused property owner at a very distinct legal and financial disadvantage. What ensues is an obvious fiscal benefit for our local county. By allowing people to complain anonymously to the county, the county will feather its nest for the county's own financial gain. This is not definitely not in the property owner's best interest. You know this, otherwise all this code enforcement and hearings officer stuff would be brought to a vote of the people by ordinance so that we could have a vote. We've already voted. 80% said no, thank you. Thank you.
Anyone next? Yes, in the back. Ms. Ahrens?
Judy Ahrens, resident of Josephine County. I don't think we could put it any better than what how articulate Sandy Casanelli was. My problem is, what part of that didn't you get? I think that's something you really should ponder over. She did her homework, as she usually does. She drives really a long distance, like a lot of these people, just to be here for this evening. And Commissioner DeNong, I like what you said. You said, is it life or death that we have to vote on this evening? This is a matter of private property, the disadvantage of the property owner versus somebody who confidentially now can say this is going on and you can't face your accuser. You really need to ponder on that. That's serious stuff. Who is being put at the disadvantage? And what she said, what I hear on the streets out there, is what pockets are being piled into as far as the financial, where is this going to be financially? It might benefit the county, but does it really benefit the person? And Commissioner Hare, I just think sometimes you distract people or you take them away with a false indication. When you had indicated that somebody had said, or somebody, Commissioner Morgan, something, well, have they had another opportunity? The administrative meeting, the few that I've been over there to, on whatever, you don't get a chance to interact. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a place where we get to interact. It's televised. We tell everybody to watch. You're being watched. Hopefully the whole county is watching so they can see how you react and interact with these people out here. That's serious stuff. You took on a very big responsibility. But when you took that oath for all of us. That doesn't mean that more of the citizens are going to be at a disadvantage or somebody, for instance, somebody's complaining at a shop downtown, somebody's out there with all the people just lingering in the evening, and then somebody calls and says, look at that mess, and then they're fine and they move out of town. Another business gone. This is serious. So if it's not a life and death situation, you want to get input from people, and this is the only evening. And Mrs. Casanelli was right, like a lot of us out here. You know, for the 3 minutes, this is kind of a joke. The 3 minutes when we should be talking about other things, which I had other things to talk about, but obviously it's going to have to be shot for the next meeting or when I can come back, under requests and comments from the citizens. Don't do that to the people. Take them seriously. Let's start with our heart. Let's see where our honest heart are, and let's go by that in God we trust. He's going to be judging us in the end. So let's take that seriously, and I think you'd do the service to the community a lot, a big service, if you would just put the brakes on a little bit and let us ponder on that and have a real discussion on this particular issue. Thank you.
David Stadenrouse, 1340 Burbridge Drive. Evening, Commissioners. The only comment I have, I guess it's multiple comments, but it's reasonableness. I'm listening to what's being said. I talked to, and I hope I characterize this correctly, but I've talked with some of the people who oppose what you're trying to do. This is ridiculous. You don't really even have to have a complaint to go out and search someone's property, look at their property or anything else. Yet there's individuals who believe, their exact words, my neighbor should not be able to file a complaint. My neighbor should not be able to file a confidential complaint that I can't see. I have the right to go confront my neighbor. I will deal with my neighbor. These are not reasonable decisions or even considerations. You follow what I'm saying? There's individuals out here in this audience who believe that they can basically confront their neighbors if they don't agree with them. if, and I can see where a neighbor, under those kind of considerations, doesn't want to file a complaint. I realize I'm a little emotional. I'm just sitting here and thinking how unreasonable all of this is. You've said two anonymous complaints. That's reasonable. If there's two neighbors of an individual who wants, who make a complaint against somebody, you ought to probably go take a look and see what's going on. If one person wants to make a complaint, but they're saying, here's my name, you can use my name, that's coming forward. I get why some people don't want to make complaints. And the idea that that individuals in this audience are going to shut down other law-abiding, American, God-fearing, I will, God-fearing individuals, no. Because we do have rights, too. So I would encourage you to move forward with this. Sorry about being passionate. I'm listening to this, and I just cannot believe the folly that's going on. Thank you all very much.
Good evening. Ron Smith, Grants Pass. I want to read something. Do we have a county charter here? 29-4 on the county charter. Josephine County, Oregon. The right of the citizens to be secure in their persons, their houses, their paper, their effects against any unreasonable search and seizure shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued upon probable cause without probable cause supported by an oath or an affirmation particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or thing to be seized. Okay, this is basically right out of the Constitution. Now, you're talking about not anonymous complaints, right? No public official, elected, appointed, or any agent of the government or entity is to enter private property for the purpose of obtaining information, data, or material without obtaining prior written consent of the property owner and tenant or court order issued upon probable cause. How do you proceed to go on? How do you proceed to do this without violating the charter? Do you have an answer for that? You're going to have to violate the charter to do this anonymous complaint thing. So if you move forward with this, why don't you admit that you're willing to violate the charter to satisfy somebody's desire? Other thing, when you do this, you're opening this up for a witch hunt. Because if I'm anonymous, say I don't like the guy. I got no complaint against the guy. But I got a way to start a vendetta against this person by simply being anonymous and making the complaint. Don't open this can of worms. You're causing a whole bunch of problems. Just stick to the charter. Stick to the laws we have. Okay? You got it. People are going to have this. Just like Sandy said, it's going to come up. So this charter, read the charter again, 29-4, and then ask yourself as commissioners, can you proceed with this for anonymous complaints? And you open up a whole can of worms. That's one thing. The other thing I want to point out, did you know Josephine County is a sanctuary county? Did you know it was a sanctuary county? You know it? Did you other commissioners know that? Okay, that's out of the county sheriff's office. I don't think many people in the county or in the state knew that Josephine County was a sanctuary county. And I don't understand which sheriff did it, but our sheriff did it because he has the power to enforce laws. He's the one that runs the jail. Don't the feds reserve about 9 beds in the jail? So it can't be for not having jail space. So I don't understand the reason why we're a sanctuary county. And I understand what the governor just did with their executive order. But I suggest you look into it, because we'll be back. We'll be back with that question about why we're a sanctuary county. Thank you.
My complaint is...
Can we start with your name, please?
Cheryl Outfleet, Murphy Creek Road. I have a neighbor who has their one of the trailers on this half acre of their property up against my fence, with the sewer line running under my fence down the hill of my property They cut trees off my property for firewood. They tore down about 20 feet of fence so they can go through my place as a shortcut, which goes right by my husband's wood shop. Right down our driveway they go. And I didn't know this was going on for a long time. I've lived in this neighborhood since I was in the 60s. I've been there for 50 years. Never had a problem like this. I knew the man that lives there since he was 14 years old. He's been a mental case his whole life, from drugs, meth, angel dust, and now he's got, I don't know, 10 or 15 other people there that do meth and drugs, and they just trash all along my yard, and right down the hill from the sewer is an irrigation ditch which runs to Murphy Creek and my other neighbors. So our irrigation water is getting contaminated by this. They were told to stop doing it, but as soon as you walk down the hill, they hook it back up again. It's just, all my neighbors, they have to look at this every day. I don't have to use that roadway to get to my house. So I don't see everything that's going on. I know the police were there last week, about four times one night, arrested a guy, which this goes on every week. The police come and break up something. They shoot guns off all the time. It stinks. It's just, you know, none of the neighbors can, you know, every day you're just upset over this. And I haven't had to deal with this, you know, for the 50 years I've lived in the neighborhood. And, I mean, I appreciate my neighbors. You know, they're the ones that really take the brunt of it, other than it being on my property.
We're going to get to everybody. I apologize. We were here for 4.5 hours last week on Tuesday. We'll be here.
I'm Judy Anil, and I'm in the Clover Lawn area, and I'm in support of this amendment that Judy was talking about and anything that can make things easier. In talking about compounds, I think we have a cluster of compounds. Just talking about 2A. Everything was calm. I'm just going to tell the story. Everything was calm in my first 19 years in our area. Then last summer, after just 6 months, we had a virtual epidemic of 60-plus squatters living in compounds with drugs and causing problems. They concentrated in an area of only a half mile of road frontage, usually hiding back from the road. Worse yet, five families new to the area were so afraid they were talking about moving already. We and our neighbors were afraid, and break-ins had occurred. This is when Charlie and I had to start our neighborhood watch. This would facilitate communication and identification of problems. We were simply unlucky. We had six problem houses. They were foreclosures, absentee owners, and several irresponsible owners, all a prime target of squatters. I am sure the word on the street was, "Come on down. You can do whatever you want in this neighborhood." They communicated with each other and were seen traveling between houses at all hours. There were about 10 RVs and many ATVs. I really had the feeling that the squatters were taking over our neighborhood. Things have improved with much effort and communication with lenders, owners, and agencies. But we still must be very vigilant, because when one group is evicted, they move to the next place, the next easy target. I can't imagine what it would be like if we had not cleared up some problem houses. But still, destruction and garbage is everywhere they've been. Still, a big challenge is when an owner is not responsible and a large number of people are allowed to live on their property. A major issue for our group is that neighbors are often intimidated and afraid to report problems and incidents. Of course, we encourage everybody as best we can. It is our hope that we can resolve small problems quick before they become huge problems. We need to make this as easy as possible. We need your help. And I have some photos I'd like to make part of the record.
I'd like your name again. I apologize.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. First, I'd like to thank you for hearing us out here. I'm here to talk about an ongoing issue with our neighborhood.
Could we get your name, please?
Yes, sir. My name is Justin Horns, living in Murphy Creek. I'm here to talk about an issue in our neighborhood. Home's located at 380 Murphy Creek Road. It's been deemed by local authorities as a compound full of mentally unstable drug addicts, with upwards of 10 to 15 people living on the half-acre parcel at any one given time. The property is comprised of a small manufactured home, a fifth wheel trailer, a motorhome, and a van that is being used as a residence, and a shed that is often occupied with multiple tents that are around it. I'm not here solely to discuss the sheer number of people that occupy the residence legally or illegally, the dozens upon dozens of different vehicles that come and go from the residence at all hours of the day, or even the many piles of unsightly and unsanitary garbage that are on the property. I'm here tonight to plead the case of a concerned neighborhood, concern not only for our safety, but for our property and for our quality of life. This is a residence which has a long history of problems, which include domestic violence, physical violence, public disturbances, stabbings, drug dealings, and law enforcement invasions, which usually end in tasing and apprehensions of multiple suspects due to outstanding warrants and drug possessions. I could stand before you and recall many instances lying awake at 3 o'clock in the morning, listening to vehicles speed up and down the shared driveway, revving their motors, individuals fighting, screaming, and assaulting one another, yelling that they're going to kill them, individuals running down the driveway, fleeing, bleeding everywhere, running chainsaws at all hours of the night, cutting of metal and wood, hammering, and other activities that are more than questionable during the hours in which they occur. There are reports by some of the other neighbors that these individuals trespass on a regular basis as a means to walk back and forth to a common road. On that same person's property, there's been documented evidence of the people in question dumping both gray and black water directly onto their property, as well as toilet paper and other garbage scattered about. There's also believed to have been multiple trees cut off of the property for bonfire and firewood illegally. They have no regard for fire regulations whatsoever, burning yard debris on no-burn days, including summer months where fire danger is at its highest. Not only are the individuals burning organic material, but I can personally attest to the burning of non-organic, illegal material, both in their wood stove and outdoors. This not only puts them at risk, but also all of the surrounding neighborhood. These unpredictable people are the kind of people that when you drive down the driveway, they line up and stare into your wife's vehicle like she's a piece of meat at the end of a rope, giving her inappropriate or rude gestures. The kind of people that when you see their home and you're leaving, make you uneasy about not having the world's greatest security system and questioning whether you'll come back to anything that isn't bolted or welded down. Ladies and gentlemen, we are dealing with an epidemic of people who choose to exist with their addiction and don't care how it affects others. We have been in contact with the following entities for almost a year now: Josephine County Sheriff, Oregon State Police, Rogue Area Drug Enforcement, Department of Environmental Quality, Senior Services, Adult Protective Services, Josephine County Planning Commission, Oregon Department of Forestry, Rural Metro Fire.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I think we're getting the picture. It's a challenge, and I don't envy your situation at all.
Help us disperse this problem. We're tired of empty promises. Thank you.
You can see how easy this process is, so I know you have just a little bit of patience. Be great, Mr. Seligman.
Before I begin, do we get to speak twice, one on agenda item, and or no?
This agenda okay. Hasn't changed, Mr. Just one.
All right, I wasn't going to say anything about this, but I will. This is a perfect example.
Can I introduce yourself?
Mark Seligman, Selma, Oregon. This is a perfect example of you have plenty of agencies. They need to do what they need to do. There's nothing else the county can do about it. She's contacted six agencies. Murphy Creek Road is obviously a problem. These six agencies should get, there's no law you can pass to solve this guy's problem. These six agencies need to do their job. I support him 100%. Now, what we're talking about here is private property rights, liberty, and security. If you do not protect your liberty, you will not have any security. The 1990 law states three complaints. What's trying to happen now through an administrative action is you're trying to make it one or two complaints, and then the county takes action. If you want to pass a law that says that, then fine. And then you give the citizens an opportunity to take a referendum, just like they did with the nuisance ordinances. The nuisance ordinances said the same thing, one or two. And the voters voted it down 80 to 20. If you go right now through an administrative action and circumvent that, the voters will never trust you because 80% of the voters, and I looked it up, 1990 citizen complaints. So that's very important to realize. And I support Ron Smith completely about what he says about the charter. We could have frivolous actions by people complaining. If there's legitimate complaints and there's three of them, they go to court and you have a process. You need not penalize 5% of the people, I mean 95% of people who are doing things wrong. I was going to talk about the sheriff tonight. This is a litmus test. The citizens have voted down levies. I sincerely hope that you listen to those citizens and you do not put this on the ballot. The sheriff should be given $1 million or more. We have two new members of the budget committee. You could say to the sheriff right now, we want you to get those that road money and hire those deputies, rather than go to the people who have voted down levies time and time again. When the government has money, it has the opportunity to spend it to safeguard the public, rather than once again go to a tax which will fail again. So you got a couple of interesting things before you. I support this man completely. This is a horrible story. You have six agencies that should be working on this. There's no law that you could pass that could help him, but it would hurt other citizens. We cannot have continued bureaucracy from a community development director who wants to take away people's rights. People will stand up against this. We must protect our rights. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rich Eckman. I live on Murphy Creek, and I'm with the gentleman here. Thank you very much for what you said. I appreciate it. As far as not having visibility when you have a complaint, you know, you should. I think people should stand up. And we have stood up many a time to the people that live at this place and told them we have a no tolerance. You cannot come onto our property. They have come onto our property. We've told the cops and everything else. There's not much we can do. We're visible. We stand up to these people because we're not afraid. If people are afraid, that's a whole different scenario, and you guys approach it however you want. But I would like, if somebody had a complaint with me, that I'd be able to go up and talk face-to-face to them and not have to try to figure out who's complaining about something. So anyway, that's a whole different issue. Our issue is sensitive, and people all around us have built fences so they don't even have to look at these people. And whenever they start coming down and saying their dog's missing or something, we tell them, you're not welcome. You're not a resident, you don't pay taxes, you're just staying at a place, you're basically violating the person, and they're taking advantage of Hank Allen is the man who lives there, and he has a lifetime situation where he's going to be there supposedly. We need that man off the place, and we need it cleaned up, and that's my thing, and thank you very much for listening. Sorry I came back again.
My name's Charlie Tice, and I live on Clover Lawn. I can tell you that 3 minutes isn't enough to tell you the fear I feel every day, and my neighbors, too. We're in danger. We deal with it on a day-to-day basis. In little more than two city blocks, we have four compounds, now three. We got rid of one, but the people moved into the other ones. 15 to 20 people live on these properties. Most of the time, they're not renters or homeowners. they break and enter, and they capture the property. They secure a house, set perimeters with signs, dogs, and guns. They set up meth labs and illegal marijuana grows to generate income. Any time, day or night, we deal with heavy traffic, honking horns, screaming tires, shouting, RVs racing up and down the road, bombs set off. We think that's a hobby. Gunning engines to the point where you think it's going to blow up. And that happens like at 2 and 3 in the morning. Standing and staring with a shotgun in their hands, watching you. Screaming. You'd think their throats would bleed the way they scream at night. Fighting. Drug deals. And they wear masks over the lower parts of their face during daylight drug deals. A truck was set on fire in a front yard. We have so much garbage and trash thrown out into yards that we have a fantastic rat population. Confrontations cause menacing with threats of bodily harm and verbal abuse. Homes have been invaded and nothing was stolen. They were just broken up and trashed. One gentleman had his house broken into twice because of a confrontation with a group of these people. There has been theft in the neighborhood and threats against children. One gentleman was working and his two daughters were home alone and these people were kicking in his back door. They have bragged that they are inviting more to come to our area. 3 FBI raids have been done in the past year. I haven't slept without a light on or in my bedroom for almost a year, and I sleep with a gun. That's how bad it is. And you know, sometimes you hear this maniacal laughter. You can hear metal rending at night. And boy, that sure breaks up your sleep pattern, I can tell you. Thank you.
It's tough to sit here and keep listening.
John Lesh, Grants Pass. Good evening. I'm going to talk about sanctuary cities and that, but I wanted to make a small comment first.
And I just really appreciate it.
Excuse me?
Thanks. I wanted to hear you, Mr. Lesh.
Oh. I want to make a brief comment on please do not back off on this complaint issue. It's obviously very divisive and difficult to settle. I know we've had trouble before trying to settle it, but the these people here have a utterly complaint that is utterly justified. This is a reprehensible way to be treated by these people. So I ask you to keep at this. Don't table it somewhere. Now I'll talk to you about what I can.
We're going to put you in charge of it, Mr.
Excuse me?
Lesh. We're going to put you in charge of settling.
That wouldn't be a bad idea. As a result of the last presidential election, there has been a lot of news regarding sanctuary cities, counties, and recently sanctuary states. This has led me to inquire as to the status of Josephine County. I have done some research on this and have come to the conclusion that we are a sanctuary county. This discovery has brought me before this board to ask for confirmation or denial of this presumption. Should it not be true, then this inquiry is terminated. However, should it be true that Josephine County is a sanctuary county, then I further request answers to the following questions. 1, who decided that we were to be so designated? 2, from what authority did the designation obtain its legitimacy? 3, if it was from the past, was the decision reauthorized by a present office holder? And 4, was there a written statement given laid out the reasoning for the designation? In addition to the answer to these questions, I also request from the board a copy of that statement, should one exist. Finally, I think a written statement from each commissioner outlining their own position on the designation of Josephine County as a sanctuary county would be beneficial to our citizens. Thank you.
Incredibly thorough as always, Mr. Lesh. Appreciate it.
Hope you guys stay for the responses. Don't rush off.
Good evening, Commissioners. Kurt Ramey. May I approach the dais? I have some information to give out.
I know you live in GP, but is that still the case, Mr. Rainey?
Right.
You still live in GP?
Yes, Grants Pass, I'm sorry.
In the future, if you just want to hand out your stuff afterwards, we don't want to count against your 3 minutes, and I don't know you're going to do it midway through, so we'll just... Appreciate that.
Again, Kurt Ramey, Grants Pass. First, the reason I'm here is to thank Commissioner Dandy Young for getting me a copy of the proclamation that he read a couple Sundays ago at the Right to Life. Now, I've given you both two articles by Pastor Chuck Baldwin. We keep hearing about we need to get a president who will choose the right Supreme Court justice to overturn Roe versus Wade. At the bottom of the one, January 26, 2017, Pastor Baldwin talks about in 1857, the Supreme Court issued a ruling against African slaves. You can read the rest of it. But then, who overturned that ruling? In 1868, the Congress overturned what the Supreme Court wrote on. Now, why can we not get our Congress? Why are we depending on the Supreme Court justice and the Supreme Court to overturn Roe versus Wade? In the articles, I underlined some things, or X'd them. From 2000 to 2006 election, the Republicans had the presidency, the House, the Senate, and the judiciary. Did anybody bring up anything about stopping abortion? No. Congressman Ron Paul had a bill that would recognize life begins at conception, and it would be taken out of the court's hands. Did it ever get brought forward? No. So when we talk about Republicans being pro-life, they're not. Maybe something will happen this time around. I don't know, but please read the articles. Even there's a part of it in one of the articles where the doctors don't even apply the Hippocratic Oath to preserving life. Here in Oregon, Washington, Montana, we have euthanasia. So we got abortion killing people and euthanasia. So I hope and pray that you'll read these articles, and I appreciate Commissioner DeYoung for being at the Right to Life. What saddens me, we have 34,000 people in Grants Pass, and only 605 people stood up for the right to life, or the sanctity of life. Now I'm going to make a comment that may tee you off. But ladies and gentlemen, you are complaining about the problems.
Mr. Ramey, you need to address the board, and that's why you're here.
I agree what they're saying. The problem is, and this is where I'm going to get in trouble, the city council voted or spent $258,000 for a new logo, Live Rogue, and that's what you got out there, people, Living Rogue.
So I really want to encourage people to keep their emotions in check and really address the board when they're commenting. Somebody's going to be last, too, so just appreciate that it may be you.
Hi, my name is Ginger Edlison, and something I didn't say the last time we were here was I'm president of the Homeowners Association. It's North Valley Mobile Home Estates, so I'm representing 17 people that live there, and I'm here to complain about 3344 Camp Joy Road, where they've, on a half acre, they have a old school bus that's been there for probably 35 years, single wide mobile home, two campers, a mini motor home, 7 to 9 cars, and now there is a new mini motor home that is parking in the street in front of this place. Plus, there's garbage everywhere. There's play equipment for children. Now, it has to be, I don't know, you don't see the children very often when you go by, but it has to be very, very unhealthy. There's certainly no places in those campers for restrooms, so where are they going to the bathroom? And also, I just learned that they're cars being parked over on Portland, which is across the street. that they don't know who they belong to, whether there are people at this place or not, but it is absolutely a disgrace, and it's getting worse every day. So I don't know, you know, is there any time that you can say that maybe somebody will come out and do something about them getting it cleaned up and moving these people out of there? There are people living in the bus, in the old mobile home, in the campers, in the mini motor home. So I have no idea how many people are living there. Anyway, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Ginger. What was your last name again?
Edlifson.
Do you mind spelling it for me?
Edlefson.
I didn't catch that. I got it now, but I guessed wrong.
It's okay. It comes out all kinds of ways.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Yes.
I'm Eunice Kendall.
Whoa. And I'm also Murphy Creek Road, and I know you're tired of Murphy Creek Road, and I'm not going to get emotional. There's some facts that haven't came out yet. When the sheriff and state troopers were at this house on Thursday night and they arrested a gentleman, in the newspaper it said that there's marijuana grow on the property. There is not. I don't know where they're getting that. The sheriff, when I was talking to him, said it was on Cheryl's right behind. It is not on that one either. If you go in, you can overside, you can see that it's none of these properties. This is a half acre. In order for us to get out of our driveway, we have to go past that house. There's no other way out of our driveway to get onto Murphy Creek. So I can't walk anymore, and we've been there 4 years. Can't walk by there anymore because of the yelling at me, the gestures. I've had a guy get in his car and follow me down the road just to walk down to the store. So, fact, we know that there's prostitution going on. We know that there's drug deals in the driveway and in front of the house. When we went over there Thursday to try and calm down all of the yelling, we were the bad guys. We were the ones that were yelled at and told to get off the property. We weren't on the property. We have meth going on, the pills. It's out in the open. It isn't like they're hiding it or anything. They don't care. So, and 3 o'clock in the morning is when the guy got caught in the leach field. He rode over it because he brought in wood. We have no idea where that came from, and he got stuck. Justin was nice enough to go out there at 3 o'clock in the morning and pull him out of the leach field. So again, there is no grow on that property, and we know all of this is going on, and why should I not be able to walk down to the mailbox and get my mail? We just want it to stop. It's been too long. It's horrible. So they see us go out. If we go together, when we go together, I lay in the bottom of the car so they don't see me. So then we go and do what we have to do so they think that someone's at our house. This is ridiculous. And I don't have to wait for the 3 minutes I'm done.
Mr. Hunker?
Bill Hunker, Merlin, Oregon. Boy, I was going to say something else. I certainly am supportive of what they're doing. It sounds like it's hardly anything that we're too worried about being anonymous, but rather getting the sheriff involved. I know that the community planning has said that they won't even go out on a marijuana grow because they're afraid. I don't see why they'll ever do anything about a compound this complex. $1,000 fine is not going to do this.
Mr. Hunker.
Oh. What I'd like to say, however, is a very practical thing for me, and that is when you have two people identified as people that can sign anonymously, I would definitely like to be the two people in different addresses.
It is.
It doesn't say that. Does it say that?
I brought that up in the admin.
Let your time go.
Keep going.
Okay. That's my primary objection, is that you get a husband and wife, you get something. So that if you're going to go ahead with this, that at least has to happen. I also believe in what I've heard here today, that if indeed this can come out in a court, that you owe the person who's giving the complaint written notice of that when they sign their complaint for being anonymous, that it says, I will initial the box that says, I understand if this goes to court, I will not be anonymous. I think that otherwise you're leading them to believe they're anonymous and you're not in that particular instance. And that's really all I have to say. I think adding the building and safety, you're open Pandora's box for spite, for harassment, for all kinds of things, particularly small stuff. This is where the energy of the county needs to go. Thank you.
Even when you think you're going to be last, you may not be.
Yeah, good to be here. Gunter Ambron, Ivy Drive, just south of Cave Junction, also with the Ken Rose Neighborhood Watch. And so we're trying to pull together our resources, and I really feel for what's going on at Murphy Creek Road. We had a lot of the same issues, similar issues going on, and also with Cave Junction. It happens in Cave Junction every evening between 1 and 5 o'clock. So, and I know Lily has been out on patrol with CJ Patrol. And so we're thinking of having you, Lily, as being our liaison for what we're working on with a community watch support outreach campaign. And basically what that is networking all of the neighborhood watches and getting a representative from everybody and then helping to promote neighborhood watches in those areas that do not have a neighborhood watch, at least to have somebody, a representative in the neighborhood. And Sheriff Dave Daniel did a saturation project for us back in, I think it was early May, and he came out in force with about four deputies, I think, and four OSP, and also one or two rangers as well. And we watched them run around, chase. They did 9 arrests, and we were just cheering away with this Cave Junction patrol. And along with the citizens, along with all the other stakeholders that we can pull together right now, for the last 5 years, there has been a project called the Ford Family Leadership Project. And right now in the Illinois Valley, we have over 100 people that have been trained, most of them already leaders, that have been trained to team up and to address issues in the community. So, and last year, their project came up, of course, number one with public safety. And they have about 18 other different projects that they're trying to, you know, beautification in the schools and stuff like that. And so me and actually Chief Dennis Hoke, who's also a neighborhood watch on the Idyllwild area, me and him and also Jimmy Evans are kind of hitting the leadership team. So what we're trying to do is train the leaders and then help to train the other neighborhoods. So that's what we're working on involving. And then pulling in all of the partnerships and especially the commissioners. There's no quick fixes to administrative solutions, you know. So I'd like to connect with you guys later on.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ambron.
Grants Pass. Can you hear me? I guess I'm the last person, perhaps. I wanted to sympathize with you folks, and it points out the failure of this county and its services to provide for its citizens. All of the complaints that these folks are making on Murphy Creek Road are in violation of laws that exist today. They say that they've been visited by county sheriff, state police, et cetera, et cetera. Why has this problem not been taken care of? Why is this an ongoing failure of public safety, the county, the state, to provide these people their right to live in peace and not be harassed on a daily basis by people who are breaking multiple laws and causing public health issues? I know there are laws about sanitation, laws about mobile homes not having septic to empty into, laws about intimidation of your neighbors, noise after a certain time of the day. I know that these are all on the books. Why are they not being enforced? Anybody have an answer? Why? These people are trespassing, they're destroying property, private property. They're intimidating. So, this is the fault of the county. It's squarely on your shoulders. You don't need any more ordinances. This is a problem that needs to be addressed with the resources you have right now. My other question, and this is very short and it's almost rhetorical, but the last gentleman was talking about, and I've thought of this problem before too, you know, we can coordinate neighborhood watches and we can get everybody together, but what are we doing? Are we then going to arm the neighborhood watch to confront the people
really
who
are
being...
You just really need to speak into the mic and address the board so we can hear you.
The neighborhood watch, as it gets organized, and that's a good thing in a way. You know, I'm in favor of that. But what is the end result? What's the point to confront the people who are harassing these folks in this neighborhood? You're going to have two huge groups of people fighting off. And it's not their job. The job lies with public safety, the sheriff, all
much.
Of that.
Appreciate your comment. Anyone else wish to request any comments for the citizens? We will bring it back. Yes.
Hello, my name is Jennifer Bezzetto, and I don't feel I need to go over what's already been stated, what's going on here on Murphy Creek Road, but I would like to add that all of this is happening directly across the street from a charter school of very young children, and these people are walking right by the school as well as parking in the driveway of the school. And Hidden Valley High School is also just down the road from all of this, and that is a lot of young impressionable minds being exposed to something they shouldn't be. That is all. Thank you.
Anyone else? Nothing but easy issues tonight, so goodness. I wrote a whole bunch of things. I think Mr. Lesh's statements probably resonate the most as far as this is an issue that is easily set aside when you have an election result like we did a couple of years ago. I think it's hard, and I'm not sure that anybody in this room fully understands the breadth of the challenge. I've been on this board for 6 years, and I'm still grappling with it. I'm going to have a tendency to disagree with you, Ms. Lesh. It is not my responsibility. It's not the county's. It's everybody's. I'm just a delegate. I'm a surrogate. I'm a person, this board is, who was elected to do the best they could with the resources that were provided. It's never going to be perfect. I'm not aspiring for perfection. I'm aspiring for improvements. I would say that, like anything, we're doing a really good job with the resources we have. There are going to be shortcomings, and if things go the way they are going to continue without any kind of change in the amount of resources that this county has, It's not a day too far away when there will be no rural patrols provided by this county. It'll be state troopers, and that's it. And that's a sheer fact. That's a reality of diminishing returns of revenue that we've hitched our wagon to a forest receipt star that is dying. And there's got to be a change there. Otherwise, that's exactly the way it's going to go eventually. And it's not that far away. It's really a budget cycle or two. And that's just the way it is. I think, honestly, it was a generation before me that kind of allowed that to happen. I was in high school in 97. The spotted owl was listed in 98. And so I really wasn't up to speed on what was going on. But there were a lot of people in leadership positions that just kind of let that happen and let that revenue stream evaporate as a resource to pay for these things. We generated $2.3 million last year of shared receipts that came to Josephine County. Historically, the number was 12 to 14. So try to tell me that you can continue to do the same things you used to do when costs have increased and your revenues have been slashed by a significant amount. It's not going to happen. It's just a sheer reality. My predecessor, who I took his place, he didn't champion forest management. In fact, he was a known protester of timber sales. And I didn't think that was appropriate. I think forest management is a totally appropriate revenue stream to pay for county services, and it should be pursued to the nth degree. That's why we've got three lawsuits, one against the state, two against the feds, for that exact purpose. Is it ever going to be the way it used to be? No. But, man, that solved a lot of problems. It built this building, built the courthouse. It built a lot of stuff. It provided for law enforcement that made a reasonable place for people to live. And if rightly so, want to delegate the responsibility of trying to work out this challenge between neighbors to the county, to the government, we got to have the resources to deal with it. Otherwise, this challenge, although, the specific one, it's duplicated 100 times throughout the community, you have every right to pursue your own legal options of taking these people to court. That's where we're getting to. It's not just always us. There's a balancing act here, and the scale's tipping to where we're not going to be able to provide the kind of resources, even if we pass this. This isn't the issue, as Mr. Hunker pointed out here today. Everybody's been pretty willing to testify about where it's happening and who it is, and they're right here on the record with their name and address. This administrative policy is not going to solve this problem here today. And just because their building codes are up to date or what have you, they're still going to be really challenging neighbors. And so you've got to have law enforcement, honestly, is the thing that's going to separate the good guys from the bad guys. It's the oldest profession in the book. And it's I don't know of a whole lot of societies around the world that are advanced in dealing with themselves without it. So I come back to Mr. Lesh's point, and I look at my notes and I say, we've got to keep discussing this issue until we reach a resolve. And more people than just what are in this room or tuning in tonight understand that there's a reason why we present these things, even if they're unpopular, to the public as proposed solutions. Because I don't know what's exactly right until I put it out there. This board is looking to refer one more non-binding question about one of the biggest challenges I think this county's ever seen, which is recreational groves and residential areas. And I don't know the answer to it, but I'm going to ask you guys. I'm going to ask registered voters this May. This board's going to put forth a non-binding question. It'll be the seventh one that I've done since I've been in office, because I want to know the answer to the questions that drive policy for this body and to figure out the best possible solution when you guys guide me in what direction you want me to go. So it's a partnership, Ms. Lesh, and I think that's what you intend. We're going to continue to do the best we can with the resources we have, and we may not always get it right. In fact, there's a lot of times we'll probably get it wrong the first time. But we're going to step back and take another go at it, because I think, we are a board who was born and raised here. I don't know where you're going to find that around the state, but we could be the only ones that, and I know almost all 120 commissioners, and I'm trying to think about it right now. You've got a board who cares about this community because we're multi-generational in my case. I can't speak for the other two. We're here. This job is no surprise that it is wicked hard, but we all signed up for it to try to figure out a solution. And people's livelihoods, their lives, their lifestyles are on the line for us to get it right. So I share your emotion. This is tough. I'm willing to lean into this. And I applaud Julie Schmelzer and Councilor Hicks, our two, three and a half commissioner, for leaning into this issue and trying to figure out. There were some specific questions that I think people are interested in hearing the answer to, and you're probably the person I want you to hear from first. That whole, if we have anonymous complaints, I never really was clear in my mind whether or not they were to remain anonymous throughout the court proceedings or were going to be disclosed. So if you wouldn't mind clarifying that, I'd sure appreciate it.
When I remember case law was presented to us that answers that.
Council, yep, and the way an anonymous complaint becomes anonymous is when the person requests it and the county provides an assurance that it will remain anonymous. And we've created some language that I can certainly provide over to community development. And once that assurance has been rendered, then that means the county is not allowed
to disclose
going forward
that.
To disclose that. That's right. That's right. So we would.
What I remember is we take the case on and are acting on their
yes.
behalf to proceed.
In all
the
cases,
county is the accuser
yes.
at that point.
Yes. Yes. The county might call the complainant as a witness, in which case the person would voluntarily surrender their anonymity. That'd be interesting. The way it would play out in a courtroom, I mean, as we discussed in a previous public meeting, would be I would project that the accuser, being the county, would be represented in the form of the investigator, the code enforcement officer, who would probably present to the court that they received a complaint, whether anonymous or otherwise. Let's say it was anonymous. They'd say we received two anonymous complaints pursuant to our policy. I, being the code enforcement officer from the county, went to investigate and abided the search and seizure, indeed, provisions both of the Charter and the United States and the state constitutions. And, of course, the defense counsel would have an opportunity to parse the investigator's actions to ensure that was the case. And then they would say, okay, I investigated it, and I, being the code enforcement officer, observed the following violations. And so that's how it would play out in the courtroom.
So the other part of that is I specifically asked about the advantage of two people on one property, one household,
yeah.
being able to complain versus somebody who's single or elderly living alone, and what I was told is two separate households.
Yeah, yeah. And I did see that edit. I'm gonna concede that there may have been something lost in translation between the administrative apparatus within the courthouse in terms of getting that draft actually in front of you today. And that being an important feature, I do recommend that you actually, sadly, table the matter to ensure that you get exactly the draft that we would want you, that we believe you have vetted and requested.
Felt like that was a likely outcome of tonight's proceeding.
So just to clarify on the first one, the anonymity, the state had, or presented to us, was five different criteria that the state had that you had to ensure that confidentiality. That if even in discovery, you would have to redact that information of sorts. That person had an expectation of privacy promised by the county, we have to honor that.
We'd be civilly liable.
Yes. So they would truly be confidential. But that's also why it's not one confidential person who can harass and have a vendetta after somebody. It has to be two separate households that have that anonymous complaint. Unless they want to say, I'm the one that's naming it and you know who it is, that's different. And that's what we currently have. So we were trying to add a layer of protection on the anonymous by making the two anonymous complainant minimum requirement.
Yes. I guess that you could consider that to be an added layer. Currently, as was very eloquently described, the county's default pursuant to the 1989 policy is that confidential complaints are accepted by the county. That was amended by the subsequent policy, the 1991 policy, that of the board that stated that the exception was going to be for planning, building code, and environmental health, meaning solid waste violations. And thus, that policy has remained in effect since that time. And so and it was, I think, adequately explained earlier that the solid waste ordinance is not being changed at all here. It references the solid waste ordinance, but it is not changing ordinance number 90-16 at all. That is remaining the law of the land going forward, whether you pass this or not.
So I just have one other clarification on that while you're there. The policies from 89 and 91 were not created with ordinance, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Because, therefore, we could not change them unless we were an ordinance to get
board resolution. Board resolution, yes. This is a board order, and that's how you amend your policies and procedures manual, is through board order. But that would rescind the resolutions of 89 and 93.
So just a quick clarification for the public. It sounds like some of these things could be challenging to understand. And my understanding is this evening we did a proclamation, which is about here. And then we have resolutions that we do sometimes. We have board orders, which are directives to staff within the county. Those are our rules with which we kind of run the county government. And then there's ordinances. And those are laws of the land. Those are things that everybody has to abide by. And so that's just kind of the hierarchy of how we go about dictating things.
What you're effectively doing is providing direction to the community development director. That's what's going on here. The board is directing a member of the county staff.
I have other things when we're ready to go on.
Did you have something on this point?
I have something on this point, but it's, I don't even know where to start. I feel so sorry for the second row back there.
Don't go too far.
Yeah, where do you start? You've been, gosh, haven't been treated very well. I'm looking at Murphy Creek, I'm looking at Camp Joy, I'm looking at Murphy and Cloverlawn. Those are three, I would call those hot spots. And it looks like everybody in the world, you've contracted every government agency that is supposed, twice, and that is supposed to respond. And out of all of those agencies, if you took all of those people, you could surround that place and herd people off like cats. But you're still living with the same problem you started out with. How many times have those people been told of the laws, the rules, the ordinances, the codes? I don't care what it is. They're not going to follow the law in any way, shape, or form. Now, we're going to go back. You said you were born here. Commissioner Morgan was born here. I was born here way before they were. I was here when the first busload of people came up here from San Francisco in a bus. They were all living in the bus. And I was here pre-marijuana. I drank beer at 16, not smoked pot. Excuse me. I didn't use cannabis. But guess what? I thought it would be something that would just kind of, you know, it's like every other fad, it's going to go away. Mary Groves out there, you can attest to this, Mary Groves. Also, Ms. Anderson, you can do that. But we were here before, so we know what it was like before to leave your screen doors unlocked, leave the windows down in your car. We can't do any of the above. Mr. Seligman is absolutely right. This is an absolute crumbling of why do we have all these different agencies. And even collectively, they can't do anything about a half a dozen or a dozen or 15 people that live out there right next door to you and is ruining your quality of life, ruining your rights. So, you know, when I hear, you know, gee, you've got to be careful with this and so on and so forth, I understand the fear. You're a pretty tough kid. I'll bet you don't take any sass off of those people. And same to you. You look like you've been around here a long time. But to the people that aren't tough at heart, guess what? They have to have an avenue with which to do that. We've asked Julie Smeltzer to do something. She's brought this back, and now she's getting beat up for it. And we're not changing the ordinance. The ordinance has been around for a long time. And you're right, Ron. Maybe that we do need to review that charter, because that charter is going to come back over and over and over to get in the way of the present-day situation. We got a real problem, and I don't know what to do about Cloverlawn, but, you know, I think we're going to have a conversation about Clover Lawn and these hotspots. Maybe we need to do hotspot law enforcement where we don't ever give up out there, that there are a squad car pulling in their yard every day, every month, and they call it whatever they want. Did I hear you say, Councillor, that you would like to get the wording right on this before we acted on it? I'm okay with that. And okay, I'm sorry for the diatribe, but you know,
it's appropriate to move forward something we don't have.
I really hear what you're saying, and I really don't know. I wish we had an army to come in here and clean this up, and so that we would have the 95% that I'm told that are really good people. I want them to stay, but if there's only 5%, you know, I don't know what to do about it. You can't talk. Afterwards, you know, stick around. Thank you, Chairman. I'm sorry.
Not at all. No.
Run off.
So I don't think our charter is in conflict at all with what we're proposing today. Matter of fact, there is a step that you go through for legal search and legal process. But I want to bring up something else that's something I took an oath to. And here's the preamble of the Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, now we've talked about we don't have a perfect situation here, but in order to try a more perfect union, to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility. Do you guys have tranquility on Murphy Creek right now? How about a common defense? Does that exist? Promote the general welfare. When you have sewer running down your property, do you have general welfare? And secure the blessings of liberty. You do not have a right to liberty when your liberty takes away somebody else's liberty. That's where your liberty and freedom stops. Liberty, yes, my pursuit of life, but as soon as I take yours away, I gave up my right to liberty. And we forget that that's what the Constitution, the oath that we swore to uphold. Justice, domestic tranquility, provide a common defense, promote general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity to ordain and establish a Constitution. To me, those are marching orders to a bigger thing that I took an oath to, and we're trying to come up with ways to do that. Last week, Dan and I were both at the Rogue Valley Council of Governments, where all the state agencies were there, and the Regional Department of Environmental Control, or Quality DEQ, was there. We gave her an earful. Matter of fact, I gave her an earful, and then Dan got a hold of her. And
Murphy Creek came up.
It was one of those things that, to me, you guys sat through a five-hour hearing, and you took the time to tell us, why aren't they responding? What do we have a charge to do? We can convene. We can get those agencies together and say what's going on. Well, I can tell you that I personally experienced problems with the neighbor cutting sprinkler heads, leaving bullets next to vehicles, egging cars, roofing nails in the driveway, all these different things. Called the police, tried mediation, all these different things. And I'm told, you know, be a good neighbor, just suck it up. And the final solution for the police, because we had plenty of police, I live in the city, they said move. That was their only solution they could offer me. But you know what changed that? It's having a jail. When the city started renting jail beds, all those things he could do would be held accountable. But at the time, it was when the cuts were and there was no jail bed. So we are coming up with trying to find solutions that's not all tax-based, that we're looking for revenue sources. I'm going to be in Salem on Tuesday testifying before a revenue hearing to try to ask for more revenue to our community so we can help with public safety and criminal justice system, law enforcement. But we also are looking at other means of getting funds dedicated towards our system so we can have help. We can't do it alone. You see what our revenue source is, and there's a limit to what we can do. But we're going to be presenting to you guys, potentially, options that can change this. In the meantime, we're going to keep advocating, and I suggest you call the sheriff every single day, every single moment you are aware that someone's on the property. I know. It's not a perfect system, and the limits are, even if he arrests somebody, can he lodge him in the jail? Nope. So that's one of the things that we're looking at. And in order to hold somebody, I can tell you that I was familiar with the property already because of my past career. Somebody that's being tried for attempted murder came out of that property and is in our custody right now. And it's not a good situation. And it's interesting to me the day that we read the proclamation about people that are intimidating and harassing and all this other kind of stuff. And yet, that's exactly what you guys are being held victim in your own communities. So as far as we hear you, that's part of why enforcement of regulations is necessary. And when we continue to have a community that says don't enforce anything, why have rules? There has to be enforcement. There has to be accountability for the sake of tranquility, calm and welfare, protection of our liberties. And I am all for property rights. But as soon as your property rights come onto my property and you're taking my property, it's no longer your right to do it. And that's when enforcement comes into play. And that's when society requires regulation to hold. Because I had someone come into my office last week and say, you just need to tell everybody to be good neighbors. You are. You drug them out at 3 a.m. You are being a good neighbor. I'm sorry, that's not changing the fact that your public health and safety are at risk. And that's when we have to try to see what we can do. But it was our intention that it's listed two different households in that. And so I understand why we will have to table this tonight, because we talked about that already. It is what the intention was, to in order to protect somebody from harassing. And that's not the intent either.
Are you done?
I do want to address the sanctuary county and state, but I can let you jump in and I'll come back to that.
Ms. Castanelli had a, she summed it up very well with what she said. It was very understandable and everything. And I think the next person said, didn't you hear what she said? You know, did you hear what she said? I think Ms. Ayers said, did you see what she said? But I'm looking at liability. I'm hearing what these people say. I'm hearing what Cloverlawn says. I'm hearing what Camp Joy says. These people are scared. So we don't do anything as a body. We don't do anything as a community. We don't do anything as law enforcement. We don't do anything as citizens of Josephine County. We turn our back on it, turn the music up, and leave these people to their own devices. Where's that liability? If we ignore their plight, where does that liability come back to us, Counselor? Where's our liability for ignoring it?
Yes. In terms of discussing liability for the protection of the taxpayers, I'm going to reserve that for a confidential memorandum with a full legal analysis, okay, if that's what you're interested in. When we start talking about liability within a public sphere, then the taxpayers kind of go at risk there. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Sorry I said that. But it was right here.
Anything else before we go on to the sanctuary county element? I had one other element. The financial gain is such a joke. And former Commissioner Sandy Castanelli, she knows that. All of those fines, they don't go to benefit anything but the enforcement process. And that we're going to generate enough revenue to make any kind of difference out of this process is just a joke. It's an absolute joke. So,
well, no, it's flat out wrong.
Yeah.
It's not even a joke. It's not
even an option.
It's not funny to accuse people of financially lining their pocket to enforce safety when that money does not come back to us. It is not lining any of our pockets. It's not even funny. It is not a joke. It's just flat out wrong, and it's misleading, and it's wrong.
Sure. I'd like to address this before we move on to the sanctuary county element. So if you wouldn't mind, that'd be great. And we'll,
I may not be here when you discuss this next time, so I just want to make sure I clarify some of the things that were said.
Quitting?
Pardon me?
Are you quitting?
No, I'm going on vacation.
You can't
go. She is the fourth or fifth, depending on how you define it, planning community development director that I've had the pleasure of serving with so far. So if I'm a little paranoid, there's a reason.
For those that want to run me out, I just want you commissioners to know I'm not leaving until I've done my job. So I just want to clarify some things. First of all, so you hear these complaints. Most of them we have addressed. The problem, as you know, is it takes a really long time. We don't have the citation authority, so we have to rely on the entire process to unfold. Most of what you've heard will be coming to you for further discussion. That will be in a discussing possible litigation, perhaps, on some of these. So the problem lies that some of what you heard will not be coming to you because they have not made a complaint, because they're afraid to make the complaint. And that's what this, what it comes back to is, we're doing everything we can. We are following the existing policies on them, but some of them we just can't address because the person won't come forward and file that complaint out of fear. We want to address all of the things you've said. So we want to do exactly what these people are saying. When they say, why aren't these agencies doing it? We are. It takes a long time. And some of them we can't because of the policy, so let us change the policy so we can address these issues that are before you that you've heard. There was a comment that the voters have spoke, and it's three inspection or three reports are necessary, so why are we discussing two? For those commissioners that weren't here or are familiar with that document that Mr. Sugelman was referring to, the process right now says to complaint on rural development violations, it takes one. It's not three, it's one. We need one person at the current time to file a complaint for us to go out and follow up on that complaint. This process is actually working in the direction of trying to make sure that more people can actually file a complaint. For example, this is saying you need two.
Pardon me, I'm really distracted. Distracting. I think whoever has the phone in the back, if it's Mr. Seligman, you need to take it outside or turn it off right now. Really appreciate if everybody could just put their phones on silent.
So for those that want three complaints, this is actually a step in the right direction. We require one right now, and we're saying, well, if you want to make it confidential, you have to have two. So it's trying to get more in line with that. I want to talk about the agencies. When you have multiple agencies out there, on tough projects, we do try to have all the agencies coordinate and work together. The problem is, with state agencies, many of them cannot receive anonymous complaints. And that causes a problem with the people that want to actually file the complaints, because they'd have to come forward and be in the report then. There was a comment about the county being afraid to inspect properties. Our code enforcement administrator has a reputation, and we've discussed this before, for not being afraid. She formerly served gang members. We talked about this. So she is not afraid to approach properties. She has been approaching them. There's agencies when they have their agency meetings. So all the code enforcement agencies get together once a month, and they talk about cases and how they can partner on them. And one of them made the comment that, well, don't go out to X property because there's guns out there and it's just not a safe place. And she said, what are you talking about? I've been out there a couple times. So to say that the county is afraid to inspect these properties is totally inaccurate. When we get a complaint, we follow up on them. We're not afraid to inspect them. And I think that the people here that have come forward and filed a complaint and have worked with staff can testify to the due diligence and how hard Denise has been trying to take care of these problems that are out there.
One thing also that you triggered a memory of mine, when we were speaking with the regional director of DEQ, we brought up how they had not accepted complaints from your department that had been filed with your department, and we challenged that as well, and she said she would be looking into that to allow those to happen.
I'm glad you did that, Ms. Commissioner Morgan, because I went to the top of DEQ the other day because I was that frustrated with it, and I said, look, we need a better process to do this. We can't be calling into an anonymous tip line all the time. We have photos we need to share. We need actual contact people. And yesterday we got an email from one of the top guys who said, here are the three email addresses. Yes, let's work together. We need agency coordination on this. We since Denise has been here, we have seen a real uptick in the complaints that are being filed because we're making progress. People feel confident now because they know that somebody's going to do something with their complaint. And with the agencies, I mean, we had a joint meeting with enforcement out of ODF last week to say, how can we partner better on these? So we're getting that agency coordination. DEQ just this week sent those emails, so we feel that we're making progress on that as well. So those were the comments that were made that I just wanted to clarify. And before you made your further discussion.
This was supposed to be a short agenda. You're on for Sanctuary Cities, and then we're going to move forward with the admin.
So there was a kind of a side comment that we're essentially a sanctuary county. It's not been by any vote or proclamation or anything else like that. The governor has declared Oregon as a sanctuary state, but one of the...
State.
Did I say state?
State. You said city.
I heard
Oregon.
State.
I meant to say state.
You're
if,
okay.
If it came out funny, it's just because I stutter. Okay, so the governor has declared Oregon as a sanctuary state. That is having no change in how we are operating in Josephine County. What does have an effect in Josephine County is that the Immigration Services Enforcement, ICE as we call them and such, they do not issue arrest warrants for people that are in noncompliance. They issue detainers. Our system, our legal system, does not allow our jails to take the detainer. If the federal government was willing to take issue a warrant, then signed by a judge saying you have the authority to hold this person, then we would have them in our custody. And the people that the federal government has taken into custody already and is working through the system, we have the beds they rent. They are utilizing those. So it's just a matter of there is a state law that says that no monies can be used to enforce these things, so we're not seeking after, but that's been in place for a while. If anybody is interested, there is the Oregon State Sheriff's Association has issued an opinion piece. This is not a new change in practice, so the governor's declaration is not changing any policy or practice in Josephine County. The comment of us being a sanctuary county is because of the fact that you use a detainer system, we can't arrest on a detainer. It has to be a warrant for people's legal rights and process for arrest. So that's essentially, until they change their system, yeah, we can't take enforcement action. Federal agents would have to do that. So that's what that comment was referring to. There's been no proclamation by this board nor any previous one. We've made no declaration. It's not that we are going to violate federal law. It's just that we are already operating within the restrictions of what the law can do. If you have further questions about that, please feel free to contact our office, or I can give you a card afterwards, and I'd be happy to email you the opinion piece from the Oregon State Sheriff's Association that gives you more details about why that is. So hopefully that answers that. We're not interested in defying federal law. We all took an oath to uphold that law. So
I'm not so sure that provides the amount of clarity I was looking for. I think that's focusing on the incarceration element doesn't necessarily provide for whether or not people were just living here or whatever kind of services, sanctuary counties or cities. But I think Commissioner Morgan's absolutely right. I don't believe there's anybody at the county level who's done anything expressly endorsing the idea of what the state has done. If we are, I don't know that there is a distinction between what the county does, as we are extensions of the state. We haven't done anything since I've been here in 6 years to address this, the element of sanctuary. We've only got a handful of days if we wanted to refer that to a non-binding question on the ballot. But that could be an interesting one that Councillor Hicks wouldn't be able to sleep for the weekend because he'd be drafting some sort of question. But it sure would be interesting. I don't know what all that entails, and I apologize for my ignorance. I think it's probably something we're going to have to tease out. And if you've said you've done a little bit of research, Mr. Lesh, maybe we can chat with you about what it is that you've discovered afterward and point us in the right direction about what we need to do to explore what that might mean to the county. So something we'll discuss unless you got something to...
One more sentence on top of it. I don't know if this is any... help, but essentially, so another county, and we just started researching this today, and so I forget which one, it might have been Clackamas, a few years ago got sued by an inmate who was transferred from the county jail to the federal immigration authorities on the basis of a civil detainer, and the U.S. District Court ruled that the county was, you know, the taxpayers were liable to the person who was in the country illegally, and the county had to pay out a lot of money. And what's expected then is that if the same scenario played out in other counties in Oregon, then the same ruling would come down from the court. And thus, Oregon has become a de facto state by basically judicial decree.
But that is only a civil detainer. If it were a criminal law were a violation or that they would be arrested just like anybody else.
Little known feature of our immigration code federally is that it's actually civil. Most of it. Yes,
I'd actually like
civil.
To explore this
so,
we conversation are, yeah, at a less late hour if possible. Because we still have a couple of things.
I work this late every night. What are you talking about?
You don't wear a tie. So the noose around my neck's been here for 12 hours, and I'm ready to take it off, honestly. Thank you very much. I really appreciate people coming here tonight. But again, this is not your only opportunity. There's a number of people in the audience who have taken multiple opportunities to engage with the board, including Mr. Seligman, who sent us an email earlier today. If there's something you want, don't be constricted to 3 minutes at this session. You can reach out, as people do, on Facebook or email or phone calls or personal visits. We are at your disposal as public servants.
And can even get on the admin calendar with a topic that's
if necessary. Yeah.
So there's opportunity to get public feedback. We want to do that. We have heard you guys. We're going to continue having the discussion of what do we do.
So, item number four.
I'll let you know afterwards.
Sorry. Item number four is approval of the consent calendar. Oh, let's do the administrative calendar first. I need a formal motion to table item 2A, which is approval of order number 2017-006 in the matter of an amendment to the Josephine County Administrative Policy and Procedure A-5.
Do we need an exact date to table it, too? Okay. So I move that we table 2.A.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion to table carries 3-0. Item number 2B is approval of Intergovernmental Agreement 15-1689 between Josephine County and Oregon Department of Human Services for DD-53 client transportation.
I'm so moved.
Second the motion to approve.
2B.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? I thank Mr. Chancy for spearheading this. Let's call the roll.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries 3-0. We'll move on to item number 4, which is approval of the consent calendar. Item 4A is various minutes of the Board of Commissioners. Item 4B is approval of service agreement between Josephine County and Management Partners for Public Works Assessment. Commissioner DeYoung.
Yes, this has come from what originally sparked this is Public Works Department has experienced a decline in revenues over the last few years. And they recognize a need to assess most efficient organizational model and to accomplish operational and capital goals. So basically, it's kind of an, I hate to use the word audit, but it's going to help out Public Works to identify areas in their organization where they can do better and possibly for less money. So there has been, they've received RFPs and we've rated the different companies, and we want to go forward with contract with Management Partners to do that assessment. And so I want to make a motion. Do I need a motion on that?
Not just yet. Wait until we get done with the full consent calendar.
This has been very well vetted, and I think it's a good thing. I like it when departments want to find out if they can do a better job for the citizens for the money they're receiving. Good idea.
Great. Item 4C is Title 3-SRS 2014 Project Application, an allocation of additional funding to FireWise Communities' existing project and grant agreement with Oregon Department of Forestry and FireWise Communities programs. This is something that's been in the works for a number of years. We made this allocation to the FireWise community. It's through Title 3, which is a portion of Secure Rural Schools. Title 3 accounts for 7% of the Fed's monies in lieu of harvesting timber. We've received two allocations in the last couple of years. They expired October of 2015. So we're looking to add more money to this program. But the funds are very restricted with how they can be appropriated. And so this is a couple $100,000. I think it's $204 to this program. And it's going to be to set up FireWise communities. We're in a very fire-prone area of the state of Oregon. 25-30% of the fires in any given year happen in Josephine and Jackson County, and a lot of people don't know that. They move up from California, they buy 1 or 2 acres, and they think that, you know, everything's hunky-dory, that they don't have a maintenance issue, and they really do. Everybody needs to take the responsibility for maintaining their property and reducing the fire load, and this program helps provide resources to teach them how to do that and establish that in a community basis, to where if you're doing something that's positive and your neighbor isn't, you know, the whole thing has to kind of work together. So it's a seamless system. That appropriation is going to take place, and Ms. Hall in our office, in our emergency services offices, manages that program for us. Item number 4D is resolution 2017-006 in the matter of an appointment to the Dauphin County Board of Health. We have a representative from the city, Tyler
Flaming
is the city delegate for that board, and he'll be serving a 4-year term. Item number 4E is resolution 2017-007 in the matter of an appointment to the Josephine County Fair Board. We have a number of people who have applied and been recognized and selected for that position. With my agenda,
I can
pretty much do it off the top of my head, but go ahead.
Daniel Shepard, Lonnie Johnson, Linda Bradley, and Patty Kirkman.
That's it. That's the list for your appointments. A couple of those are reappointments, and some of those are new. Welcome to the board, Mr. Johnson. That is the consent calendar item.
It's, and condolences.
No. Yes, it works both ways. Items 4A, B, C, D, and E. I'll entertain a motion to approve.
Make a motion the consent calendar to be approved.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? I really want to thank the Fair Board for their service and the people who have signed up to help out with that. I remember 6 short years ago when I took office, the fair was in dire need of some major assistance, and it really is only as a result of the community, the volunteers, the leadership and the staff has just turned that around 180 degrees, and honestly, without those people, we wouldn't have a fair today, and it serves a vital component. I do want to make special recognition of Ms. Groves. She came as a godsend, stepped off the board to take the position as the director of that, and now she's in partnership with our current manager, Peggy, and they just do a great job with their fair board. So I can't say enough how much I appreciate that. I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for the fair, the 4-H and FFA program. I guarantee I wouldn't be where I am today. So I really appreciate that. Nothing further, please call the roll.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries unanimously. That's the agenda tonight. We have a couple of other things if the board wants to kind of put a bow on it. Any matters from commissioners?
One of the things I meant to bring up after Mr. Ambrose mentioned was the neighborhood watch. Last week had an opportunity to meet with our emergency management and talking about just things that we can do in the community with both the citizens emergency response team or the neighborhood watch. So we will continue to follow up with that as well. But again, without a complete law enforcement system, neighborhood watch can only watch. It's not the enforcement. So we have to continue to have those conversations of, but sometimes in mass, you have a response, and somebody not facing something alone is helpful. So we are going to continue talking about that as well. So I did not mean to leave that off the discussion.
One time that I forget the other item, which is provided on our agenda, to take up things that didn't have a chance to make it formally on the agenda, but it's pretty important. Didn't need to be brought to a weekly business session, but this is an effort that this board is endorsing and that Councilor Hicks and myself have kind of been championing for a number of years. A lot of the challenges that we have in Josephine County is because our federal agencies have kind of abrogated their responsibility to the citizens who live there to manage those lands to the benefit of the community that they reside. And I believe that and champion of it. So is Councilor Hicks when he was a state representative and our legal counsel. We have in our possession a number, and I can't even count. There's probably about 10, 12 letters that are going to go out to different agencies if this board so chooses that just request require by their own law that they sit down with the county and coordinate when they're going to change the strategy of the management structure for that governs these federal lands in Josephine County. This is most of the provision is under Article 43 of the U.S. Code. Other article governing the Forest Service is Article 36, if I remember, 37, 36, something like that. One of those. It really is codified in the Federal Lands Policy Management Act of 1976. So if you're are interested in that subject. It's a riveting read, but it actually really matters to Josephine County and the other counties that have federal lands within their jurisdiction. You wouldn't know it, especially if you sat on this board for 6 years, but they're required to come and tell you about what they're thinking about doing as far as a management strategy. And we're employing this in one of our lawsuits at the federal level. It provided us the opportunity to litigate where other counties who didn't and abrogated their responsibilities or ability to coordinate and signed up with coordination, we were uniquely positioned to be able to file that lawsuit. And you don't know how those decisions are really going to pan out in the long term. We made that decision 4 years ago. I made that decision 4 years ago with the board that was on staff at the time, and it's going to serve us really well. I think it's going to do everything we can to fight this battle in the appropriate way to hold their feet to the fire. So without anything else, we've already discussed these at previous meetings. It's something routinely done by the board every year to just put the agencies on notice that they need to come in, spend some time with us, and tell us. And it's working out inconsistencies with our coordination plan, which we adopted a number of years ago, with what they want to do as a management strategy. And so it would pay dividends for the community if the agencies would actually do this. And I think it would benefit the agencies as well. I just wish they would share that sentiment. So if there's an endorsement from the board to sign these letters, I don't know that I need a motion, just a general. We'll move them forward and make them available for signature.
Yes, I absolutely support asking for coordination, demanding coordination.
Great.
Thanks.
All right. With nothing further, this board is adjourned at 7:36. Thank you all.